Hi, I'm Andrew Miller. I'm an attorney with Sitka Conservation Society. I've been working on the readout issue a little bit. Thank you very much for coming. I had a couple of questions about the sheet. I really like it. It's, as far as I'm concerned, better than what's included in the actual request for the parcel in the 1970s regarding why it's a cultural historical site. I do have a question, though. I got to meet with Mr. Stan Davis, who was the Forest Service archaeologist who surveyed the site afterwards in 1981. And you talk about here about the village being by the falls. Mr. Davis's archaeology doesn't place the village by the falls. He says you don't put a village by the falls. It's got bears. You have issues. He said there's nothing there to show a village. He said the village is actually outside of the 10 acres. He said the archaeology shows it outside the 10 acres. So I'm curious of where, how you drew the 10 acres, how you picked them, especially on either side. And I guess that's my main question here, is how you came up with the 10 acres. I like this. I wonder if you could give me the sites on the Russian information. This is incorrect, 1897. Andrew Johnson was president in 1860, so you probably want to get that one. But thank you very much.
We'll talk to corporate comm about the misinformation.
First of all, these sites were nominated in 1976. There's not a single person sitting at this table, and candidly, the people that were, history, kind of rolls on. This is a process, and the information is being provided. We have information. The BIA collected information. And they basically sit down and they adjudicate it and they make a decision. And if somebody doesn't like that decision, the Forest Service is in the position to appeal. Say, Mr. Davis can say, there was no village site there. In fact, the site's in the wrong place. We will go through that process. This is still a bit of a process with an adjudication. We've had 12 appeals before the IBLA on sacred sites. As they say, we prevailed on 10, lost on 2. And if people feel that the information is not adequate to warrant this site, that's a separate process from the other things we're talking about. There is a legal process, and we all have our day in court. We would hope that the Forest Service or whoever chooses to appeal it can. We will engage with them at that. And everybody will bring their best evidence forward for a decision. In the meantime, before us, we have some core issues. Subsistence? Yes.
Thank you.
That's how we can answer it.
Good. Dale, how in the heck are you? I haven't seen you in a while.
I think I recognize you folks. My name is Dale Williams. I'm a Sitka Tribe Councilman. I'm a Baranof Island Housing Commissioner. I'm not here representing that capacity. I'm here as a Sitka Tribe citizen. I'm here as a Sheattica shareholder and a Sea Alaska shareholder and a City and Borough of Sitka voter. I want to say I thought I heard that something about the limited evidence of Native use over at readout area. If you look at the upper parking lot by Totem Park, you won't find any native use there either. It's a parking lot. And yet that's where I grew up, the cottages as it was called. I used to live in another area that was predominantly native in Sitka, and that was a creek that came down from Swan Lake, and I know the mayor remembers it. On both sides of that creek were houses. And that community suffered from, I guess it was improved by urban renewal. We needed firehouse and whatever. But my family was made to move again. Now, I may not speak as eloquently as the representatives here or the folks that are here to oppose it, but I do say that it's an emotional issue for me. 40 years ago, I think this should have been resolved. I worked for the Forest Service in Juneau in the mapping department. 1970. ANCSA was 1971. And I got to see the maps where the government's first negotiating position for our ANCSA lands was glaciers, ice fields, and mountaintops, the closest from our homelands. And I spoke about this at the town hall meeting that we had. To me, it's an issue of fairness. Although I'm not here to represent the tribe, it is a part of our strategic plan to support the Sea Alaska Land Bill. So I thought I'd like to share my feelings with you and leave it at that. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thank you for your attention and your concerns about the Sea Alaska Lands Bill. My grandfathers, Chester Worthington and James Johnson, 1912, started the first land claims. My name's Harriet Maicedo Belial, and that was 1912. We're getting close to the 100th anniversary, 2012, which we hope to bring to Sitka because the first camp was here. What I'm trying to say tonight is I have four generations now down to my great-grandchildren, and I feel that if we went by statistics, the state has taken a lot of Alaska. The government has taken a lot of Alaska. People that came up here, you can still bid on state land, and if you get it and get the highest bidder, it's nobody else's business. But I think that Sea Alaska, like Dale said, 40 years of negotiations and trying to settle the which land Sea Alaska would get, but it's very small in comparison. When you think about the land the state has gotten, the government has gotten, all the national parks and everything they tell us, like the Sitka had their 100th anniversary of the state park here, and they were honoring our culture, and I like that. And I think that, you know, where does it end? I mean, what are we trying to explain to you? Because why should we? I don't know why we need to explain, because we were the Aboriginal people. And like I said, you know, the government will take with one hand and give it to you with one hand and take it back with the other hand and give you double talk. But I'd like to remind you that the very first Indians that dealt with George Washington back in 1700s, the first Indians made them promise us health, education, and welfare. Health is our hospitals. Education, they didn't mean welfare of getting handouts, but they were pretty darn smart in exchange for 1 billion acres of land, and I read this as a national law when I was attending national conventions. My daughter now is taking up national boards, health boards, and NCAI. But we have had to adjust to the culture we're in, and our forefathers realize that. And we get the best possible people sitting here next to me. One is a daughter of Albert Kukash, our senator. And the other one is a descendant. And I would like to feel in my heart that you have enough empathy and feelings for the Aboriginal peoples, because when you think about it, the United States has 340 or so tribes, and Alaska has 220-some tribes. And if Obama could recognize us and everyone else, you know, we were the first people here. And I don't know why we have to worry that Sea Alaska might put up restricted signs, because all these owners that bought the islands around here have a right to do that. And so I feel that, you know, the way our country is going now, I won't even get my Social Security checks. You know, the Congress is close to a shutdown. I mean, that's just, by the time my great-grandchildren come into being my age, which is 77, they may not get Social Security.
Ms. Belial.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your time, and thank you for the people sitting here that give you very valid reasons why we have a right to selection of the land that we can use and that our clans and our people hold as sacred and cultural, because it means a lot to us. And I'm the seventh generation from my grandfather. I mean, I'm when all this started. Thank you for your time, and you have a great evening, and God bless you all.
Thank you. Mr. Chevalier, I'm not going to take second comments because we still have people that need first comments or questions. Thank you.
Hello, Grace Johnson-Reed, and thank you for this opportunity to ask questions. My first question is, how is public access, including non-shareholder access, to subsisted sockeye at Readout addressed in the draft MOU, which was presented to SDA today? That's the first question. The next one is, we've heard that the Forest Service might not continue fertilization, maybe due to budget concerns. If the lake fertilization is unable to continue and the salmon runs drop dramatically, would shareholders receive preferential access to the fishery? And my last question is, you've stated your intention is to keep Readout open to everyone, regardless of shareholder status. What legal mechanism will you use to override the ANCSCA provision against fishing in 17B easements if that is contained in your deed? Thank you.
Thank you.
I think the first thing is there's a distinction. Subsistence is distinct from fishing. Now, whether or not we can prove that case with BLM, I mean, that's the challenge that we've given to them is, you know, how do you, because that's also a federally protected statutory right. And that's where we're looking at it and saying it's subsistence. And that's the argument and the point that we have made. We don't want to end up with a site that stops even our shareholders from fishing. You know, as I said, the subsistence is really agnostic. There's no distinction. If there's a subsistence right and you have a rural preference, you have a rural preference. It doesn't start distinguishing people, and that's where we go back to subsistence is the right, and we think that's the right of use.
And just quickly on the MOA with the tribes, we don't speak specifically to the cultural sites in the land bill versus cultural sites we already own. It's about all cultural sites that are in Sea Alaska ownership and working with the tribe on an MOA in terms of management and use of the site. So we don't distinguish between stuff that we own now versus stuff we might have in the future. It's all important cultural property, and there may even be properties that we own that aren't 14H1 that require collaboration with the tribe. So, because we do find cultural properties on our land that we didn't select for cultural purposes. Sometimes they just are there because our people lived in the entire region. So the MOA is very broad in terms of covering all cultural properties.
Thank you. I'm going to entertain one or two more questions. I think our company, our guests have been very gracious, and I think one or two more questions, and I think...
My name is Joel Hansen. I'm going to try to use the word derogation in the next minute, if possible. I'm going to pull back very briefly from Readout. I'm going to pull back from Sinitsin, from Kosciuszko. I'm going to pull way back for a minute. I'd like to make the point that the Sea Alaska Bill, in my mind, is a substantial threat to the Wilderness Act. In 1964, the United States managed to, as one of the world's great powers, managed to put forward an idea that has never been put forward before, that wilderness actually has value. And in my mind, the Sea Alaska Bill removes wilderness acreage from the wilderness system. And my question, I guess, to this group is not the removal and the privatization of wilderness acreage in abrogation of the Wilderness Act?
Thank you.
Let me just be clear that Sea Alaska has an outstanding entitlement regardless of the legislation. What the legislation does is allow us to go and select land that makes more sense outside the boxes versus staying in the boxes. So regardless of the legislation, we have a right and an entitlement to land from within the Tongass National Forest. So the bill itself doesn't take something new. It's giving us something we're already entitled to. And I also want to emphasize how much land we're talking about here. We are talking about less than 0.5% of the entire region. When ANCSA is all said and done in Southeast Alaska, Native ownership will be less than 4%. That's a hard pill to swallow for Native people who've been here since time immemorial, that this homeland of ours, we will own less than 5%. We will own 4% of the entire region. So what we're talking about in this remaining entitlement is less than 0.5%. I don't think that destroys the wilderness of this country.
I need to add one. I think what Joel is referring to is we're not taking any land in wilderness except that there are some occasions where Native sacred sites were put in wilderness. And what wilderness did is it trommeled over the rights of Native people. It ignored their cultural property. It took it. It took it. It took it. It took it. To just simply say we're going to take some of those sites back, and what we said is they must be managed exactly like the adjacent property. You can't just make Native people disappear by creating wilderness. And that's what I just heard suggested, is we create wilderness and whatever existed there, they disappear. They no longer have an affinity to that land or have some right to be there and to use it. So I guess I just have to take exception to that one. I apologize.
Okay. I'm only going to have two more questions or comments. It looks like, yep, come on forward.
Yeah, I really like to have you really think over what she just got through saying here, because that's so very true, and that's what I was going to say. But that's really true, and you folks really need to pay attention to it, every one of you. We go time and time again watching the land that we don't have, and all the restrictions that we have, even from the Forest Service. I could go on and tell you the whole story, but you don't want to hear it. But one thing I want to remind this audience about, they're concerned about subsistence. I was born on subsistence. I've been fighting for subsistence. And no matter who owns the land, I'll continue to fight for subsistence for all our people. And all our people that have been fighting for subsistence, a whole lot of other people are enjoying that right now. But I just wanted to make that clear, because we're concerned about subsistence, and I keep hearing it from other people. No, if Sea Alaska owns that land, our land, we're still going to fight for subsistence. And we're not going to let our brothers be pushed away.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Phyllis Hackett. I have a question that was actually sent to me during the break that I'm going to ask for somebody else who's out of town right now. And that is, he says there was a provision in 41H? I don't... No, it isn't that. a provision. I think it's a 14H1. That's it. There's a provision in 14H1 that land cannot be sold. And apparently that provision has been removed from the Sea Alaska bill. And that's what he sent to me. I don't know what the question is, but I would suspect the question is, why was that removed?
This is your last question, so take a deep breath and...
If that restriction is one of the 14H1 deed restrictions, and I don't recall that being one of them, then it would be one of the covenants removed but then replaced with other limitations. But I also want to be clear that as a policy, since the creation of the corporation, we never sell our ANCSA land. We have bought and sold other property, but we never sell our ANCSA land. We have so little of it. Sea Alaska is the largest Native corporation in the entire state. We have 21% of all Native shareholders. We will have less than 1% of all ANCSA land because we are in the Tongass. So every acre we have is very precious and important to us, and we've never sold ANCSA land, and we never will. But I will look into that, but I don't believe it even matters because our board will never agree to sell ANCSA land.
So I would, again, like to thank you folks for coming here, and I'm sure we'll probably have other conversations, maybe not at the like this. But so in closing, would you like to have any closing comments? I'm going to turn the floor over to you if you wish. And
thank you, Madam Mayor. I think just a couple. First of all, we will be back. The Tongass Futures Roundtable will be meeting in Sitka, what day?
The 11th.
The 11th.
I'm welcoming you.
Okay. And so we will be here. I will be here. Jaylene will be here. Director Rosita Worrell, who's our vice chair and also chair of the Land Committee, will be here. If there's any value at any point in time in meeting with the Assembly in any kind of a discussion group, or anything else, we're prepared to do that, and we will contend 11th and 12th as the date. So, to that degree, I will say we will commit to making that, redoubling our efforts to communicate. Sometimes, when things aren't happening, you just go, well, what's happening?
Yeah.
So it's part of our responsibility to at least communicate with Jim or yourself, and at least be able to keep you abreast of what we know, which isn't necessarily all of it. Maybe sometimes you should talk to Cynthia; she knows more than we do. So, so with that, we greatly appreciate your time. We particularly appreciate the tribal people who have allowed us to come to their homeland, and we appreciate everyone else allowing us to come, and we appreciate the respectful conversations that we have. And if we've offended anyone, we'll apologize right now, and we will apologize frequently if necessary.
I thought it was a very good conversation. I think we're all a lot more informed. I think the community's a lot more informed, and our goal is to make sure that the community stays a community, and that you folks get to where you need to go as well. So, goodness, cheese.